In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Hey, it's 5:22 and we are back. Just a quick update. During the break, we got the word that Gene and the crew at Nocturnum Drafthouse has made the decision today to suspend their operation for the foreseeable future, thinking mostly about their staff and obviously folks in the community as well. So Nocturnum Drafthouse has closed temporarily, and like a lot of businesses, we hope they're all set to come back on the other side, and that when that day comes, we can get out there and support them and make them stronger than ever. So wanted to update you on that. It's 23 after the hour on the telephone line with us, practicing responsible social distancing, Alan Adams of The Main Edge, and Stella in the background. Hello, Al.
Hi, how's it going? Inevitably, it just happens to time out that as soon as I come on, Charity comes home and the dog starts barking, and it's a whole thing.
But we like it. It adds a little ambiance there.
Well, sure. How are you guys holding up?
Well, we're doing okay, adjusting to life the way it is these days. How about you?
Oh, getting a little stir crazy. I'm not going to lie, but doing my best to sort of try and stay busy and try to maintain some degree of a routine. Otherwise, things start to blend together a little bit. And the reality is, I think we all have to sort of accept the fact that we're in this for, it's going to be a bit of a long haul. So we just need to, like you said, make the adjustments.
Absolutely. Did you get a chance to watch any movies over the weekend?
I did. I actually managed to hit up a number of them, actually, on a variety of streaming services, including the one that featured the gentleman that you just had on before me.
Yeah, blow the man down with Marc Cartier, and I thought that was a hoot. I first of all, I was impressed because we've all been scarred by the Murder, She Wrote Maine accent, but I thought by and large the actors did a good job with that.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of those things where it's like you could tell that with some of them they basically just said just do Boston and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But yeah, and I mean, it certainly wasn't grating the way it certainly has been with some main set offerings in the past. But yeah, no, I thought it was a really solid movie, especially from a writer director pair that had never really done a feature before. To sort of do something this interesting your first time out of the gate is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and it's what was I right in describing it largely as a black comedy?
Yeah, no, I thought it was. It's very funny, and but it's you say that, and I think a lot of that comes not necessarily from the words on the page, but from the performers, because I was watching this and it was like, man, I don't know the last time I saw a movie that was this stacked with character actresses of a certain age.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like June Squibb, Margot Martindale, who's phenomenal. Annette O'Toole is great. Like all these older women just crushing it in this, this movie, playing roles that I'm not going to go into too much detail because I feel like this is the sort of movie where going in dark is actually very helpful.
Yes.
In terms of your enjoyment, because I knew that it had been very well received, but I didn't really know much else beyond that. But those women, the two young ladies who sort of feature at the center of the story, they play the Connolly sisters. They also put forward just a phenomenal phenomenal effort. And we're not gonna have the blockbusters for a while, Rich. But if these are the sorts of movies that we're going to get to see at home, then it's not going to be as bad as maybe it could have been.
No, I enjoyed Blow the Man Down quite a bit. What else did you see this weekend?
I went to Hulu and watched a movie called Big Time Adolescence.
I have not heard about that. Tell me more.
It stars Pete Davidson of SNL fame. It's another debut, written and directed by a guy by the name of Jason Foley. And, you know, I heard, okay, stars Pete Davidson, like, debut filmmaker. I'm like, okay, I know, I thought I knew what this movie was going to be. But it actually kind of surprised me. It's got a nice sort of coming of age vibe, and I'm a sucker for those sorts of stories. Like, young people crossing various obstacles towards growing up. Like, that's in my wheelhouse. I love stuff like that. This movie, it doesn't necessarily, like, doesn't reinvent the wheel. Like, it's not like you, there's nothing here that you haven't seen before, but it's still pretty engaging stuff, largely because it's maybe the best usage of Pete Davidson that I've ever seen, because no one's going to mistake that guy for a great actor, but he's very good in a very narrow window, and this role puts him right square in the middle. So the film's about a teenage boy named Mo Harris, played by a kid named Griffin Gluck. He's 16, like pretty typical high school student. Doesn't have a ton of friends his own age, though, because his best friend is this older guy named Zeke, and that's the Davidson character. They've been buddies ever since Zeke briefly dated Mo's older sister, like, years previously, and for whatever reason they kept hanging out, that's sort of the primary friendship that's central to the movie. And as you might imagine, Mo's parents, including his dad Ruben, played by John Cryer, who's great in this movie, they aren't super thrilled about this relationship, but ultimately Mo's a pretty good kid, doesn't really get in any trouble, so they basically let it slide. But as he's growing up, he starts to wonder about what it would be like to spend more time with kids his own age. He's used to the sort of social interactions that he has with Zeke and Zeke's group of friends. So, you know, kids who are older, drink and live in crummy apartments and generally just hang out. But he starts trying to go to high school parties and engage with his peers. And that's all well and good. Until Zeke decides to enlist Mo to start selling drugs at drastic markups to his friends at these parties, and as you might imagine, that doesn't necessarily none of the people involved are necessarily criminal masterminds here, so things start to fall apart pretty quickly, and you have one of these stories where you have a young person basically trying to make the decision as to whether they're going to stay in the orbit of this other person or if they're going to push forward and make their own way. And, you know, that's really the heart of a lot of the best coming of age stories. Again, like, it's all very familiar. Like, all the beats that you recognize from this kind of, narrative are there. We've seen teenagers struggle to define themselves on their own terms like a million times, but it's still a well-made movie, and when you take into account the fact that it is a feature debut, it's a pretty strong effort.
Excellent.
But again, just the one thing that needs to be that can't be overstated is how well Pete Davidson handles this movie. And again, like, he's literally playing Pete Davidson. Like, there's no getting around the fact that he's just playing himself. But like I said before, he just really captures the energy of the sort of slacker charisma of a slightly older BS artist. So it's a solid offering for sure.
Excellent. And one more that you saw that you want to share with us?
I did. I won't spend a lot of time on this one just because I don't know how into it people are going to be. But I saw this movie on Netflix. It's new to streaming. It's called The Platform.
Don't know about it.
Yeah, it's actually a Spanish language movie, but it's not subtitled, it's dubbed. You know how a lot of times genre filmmakers will use the trappings of whatever genre they're operating in to speak to larger social concerns?
Oh, yes.
This movie does that, but there's nothing, you know, a lot of times, like the John Carpenters of the world, the Jordan Peeles of the world, they sort of interweave it, and there's a subtlety to it in some respects. There's nothing subtle about the platform. It is, it's, you know, a hammer as opposed to a scalpel. Like that, I keep coming back to the, it's like conceptual blunt force trauma. Like that's how this movie works. The gist is very simple. We're in some sort of, I don't know if it's an alternate present or a near future or something like that, but the film takes place basically in a, it's never made clear if it's a prison or some sort of other institution, but it's basically a giant concrete structure with multiple levels, with giant holes in the floor of each level that goes all the way up and down. And the way it works is, at the top level, a group of incredibly talented and gifted chefs are crafting a feast that features all the favorite foods of everyone who is in this building. It's part of the entrance interview. Is they ask you what your favorite food is, and so all these favorite foods are on this beautiful, magnificent spread, this feast, and it basically just descends level by level into this place, and you know, the people at the top maybe aren't necessarily as you know, generous of spirit as they might be, and so the lower down you get, the more difficult it is for people to find sufficient food to eat. Like I said, not particularly subtle. As each month passes, the residents are randomly reassigned to different levels, and so we follow this one guy named Goring, and we basically follow him as he sort of moves up and down through the structure as each month passes. You know, sometimes he's down low and there's nothing to eat. Sometimes he's up high and he has, you know, access to all this wonderful food. And there are some other characters, but it's basically that sort of single setting kind of horror movie that you know, that can sometimes be really brilliant when it's well executed, and other times could be excruciatingly boring to watch. And this one leads towards the former. It's smart, again, not subtle, but it's well executed. Like it blends the sort of sci-fi and horror elements in a way to really effectively deliver the theme. It's brutal and it's very bleak, and there's a consistency and sameness, because again, you're in basically an institutionalized brutalist kind of space, and so every room is pretty much the same. But you're watching as this guy deals with not only his own issues, but the issues of various people who sort of make their way into his orbit through various and sundry means. Yeah, it was a really watchable movie, and challenging. I'm probably never going to watch it again because it gets pretty grisly in a couple of spots. But if you're a fan of that sort of intense kind of, you know, message-driven horror, like The Platform's a pretty good one.
All right. Hey, Al, we appreciate it. There's a lot out there, and obviously for many people, a lot of time. So thanks for helping us filter through some of the some of what's out there to find the tolerable, the watchable, and the really good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, it's interesting. Well, it'll be interesting to see how things go moving forward, because I think a lot of these studios, especially with their sort of mid-tier releases, I think we're going to see a lot more of early rental availability, video on demand. I don't know how much is going to go direct to streaming, but the reality is, someone charges you $20 to rent a brand new movie. You know, you'd pay that much if there were two of you going to the movie theater anyway.
Right.
So, we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out for these folks. But I'm gonna keep watching and I'm gonna keep writing as long as we can. So we'll see how it goes.
All right. Well, we'll check in with you again next week. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Thanks, Al. Be well.
You too, man.
All right. Bye-bye now. Alan Adams, The Main Edge, checking in with us here on Downtown.